Welcome one, welcome all. Thanks for joining us today. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free. It's easy to download. And it's Thursday, October 12th. Aaron pointed out to me before the show that means tomorrow is a little bit of a big day for those who like to celebrate the spookiness of the month of October. Nice coincidence falling on Friday the 13th. But this Thursday afternoon, it is office hours, and Professor John Shelton is back once again. We missed you last week, Professor Shelton. How are you doing this Thursday afternoon?
Doing good, doing good. So is this Friday the 13th's eve? Is that what we call this?
Yeah, I guess it is. That would make sense. Make sure you leave out some, like, I don't even know. What kind of candy would you leave out for, like, Jason Voorhees? Just, like, machetes or something? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to advise that.
Well, a new hockey mask, clearly.
Oh, a new hockey mask. Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. Well, hockey season's starting up right now, too, so it'd fit, yeah. Fit right under that umbrella.
Maybe, like, Jason a Voorhees. 5-gallon pail of fake blood or something.
There you go. Well, not for Jason. Jason Voorhees doesn't want fake blood.
That's okay. True.
He'd be insulted by such a poor gift.
Yeah. But yeah, it's fun to kind of get into the spooky Halloween stuff this time of year. It's fun. It's a good month. October is a good month, and happy to be back. And sorry we missed you last week, but I was doing some cool stuff.
And we're gonna get right to that, actually, John. That was going to be my first question of the afternoon. I got the chance to watch the Harvey J.K. Speaker Series presentation, though I have to say, I don't know how to properly insult you for this, so I'm just going to come right out with it. What's up with Microsoft Teams, John?
Well, Microsoft Teams is not a very good platform, but it's what our campus has contracted with for that particular part of campus we had to partner with for this talk. So that's what we had to use. And so the recording quality was not as good as it could have been. It's too bad you couldn't just come up here. I mean, I know you've got this like pesky show that you have to do, but you missed a heck of a talk. We had Nina Turner up here, and it was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. I love the people of Wisconsin too much to even take a single day off, though you know I would have been there if I could have. Did get the chance to watch the presentation afterwards. Unfortunately, had to stream it via Microsoft Teams. But I accept your reasoning, John. I won't put all of the fault on you.
That's what happens when you're the Iron Man, when you're the Cal Ripken of Talent Call Radio.
Hey, somebody's got to do it. It might as well be me. And, John, I just want to give a refresher as well, since we missed you last week. John is the professor and chair of Democracy and Justice Studies. He is the author of The Education Myth, How Human Capital Trumps Social Democracy, and the vice president of higher education for American Federation of Teachers Wisconsin, which will be the launching point of the next conversation I want to have with you, John, because we are seeing at the state level, there's a lot going on University of Wisconsin campuses. Number of pieces you sent me that I think are incredibly impactful and frankly need to be covered, because I haven't seen the kind of coverage that I would have liked to have seen, particularly with something as important as higher education. I'm going to start over with the Cap Times piece, UW System Faculty Fear for the Future of Wisconsin Higher Ed. The article begins immediately with a friend of the show, Professor John Shelton from the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, discussing how he worries about the future of public education in the state due to cuts to UW System's funding. And John, I know this is something that you are incredibly, incredibly well-versed in, and please, I'd like you to kind of elaborate on not only why this is so important, but why this is happening right now.
Yeah, so there's so much going on, and you know, I sent what Will refers to, I sent him a bunch of links to things happening on a bunch of different campuses, but it's important to think about all these things being connected to each other, and really being connected to what's happening with education more generally in this country. I mean, education... public education at all levels is, you know, we probably overuse the word crisis, but in this case, it's not an overuse. I mean, we are truly
it's accurate.
We have right wingers across the country. You know, I'm sure people listening to this know a little bit about Ron DeSantis in Florida and all the things they've been doing. Everything from the Don't Say Gay bill in K-12 to you know, doing things like completely trying to change, you know, the entire way that the new college in Florida, this public liberal arts college, operates. I mean, it's at all levels, and the right has this pretty warped view of what education does. They think that, you know, we're indoctrinating students, you know, at all levels in things that actually are out of line with most American values. What most Americans want is multiracial democracy. They want rights for trans kids. And so what the right is doing, this small minority on the right, is trying to drive that wedge between all of us. And so we see that here in Wisconsin as well. And, you know, long story short, I'll make it as short as I can, but it needs a little bit of explanation. You know, our public university system, and really our public education system more generally, but I'll just focus on higher ed, has been under attack from a regime of austerity for the last decade, or actually a little over a decade. And austerity is essentially just the political choice to starve public resources of funding, because the idea is that they don't need them, and we should do less things for the common good and you know, enable private interest. And so, you know, we've seen the funding for the UW system decrease by hundreds of millions of dollars over the past decade. And, you know, at a time when our state has, at least before this last budget cycle over the summer, a $7 billion surplus, now we still have $4 billion. Robin Voss and the Republicans in the legislature decided that they were going to cut the UW budget, not increase it by the $300 million or so that I think the Evers administration pushed for in their budget.
The initial proposal in February was $305.9 million, so spot on.
You know, but instead they decreased it by $32 million. That was the Republican proposal, in order to stop us from spending money on diversity, equity, inclusion, which just means the resources our students need to be successful. But they're trying to score political points. They're trying to tap into this like right wing culture war that's been completely manufactured nationally. And the frustrating thing is they sent this budget to Governor Evers and he signed it. And so at a time when we needed at least $300 million added back to the system, we ended up losing money. And so now you have campuses that have already been in a dire situation. It's even more critical because, you know, inflation has increased our costs on our campus. Utility costs went up about $750,000 this past year. When that comes with stagnant budgets, there's nothing else you can do but cut things. It's pretty frustrating. And what it means is that our students are at risk. They've already seen faculty and staff lines go unfilled. They've already seen some of the other resources on campus that they need go away. And now there's even more pressure on them. And campuses across the system are being asked to cut. Oshkosh just had a demonstration last week because the chancellor there is trying to eliminate about 300 positions. On our campus, we just announced 9 layoffs this week. And there's a conversation that's being driven by our administration to reduce course offerings, or excuse me, to not course offerings, to reduce majors and other kinds of major options on our campus. There's a lot of other things I could talk about. At Whitewater, they eliminated their DEI office. But these things are all connected, and they're all the root of an austerity-driven regime by a reactionary right wing that doesn't want us to exist.
Mm-hmm. If you have a question, comment, or concern for Professor Shelton, the professor is in. It is office hours. Give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. And John, we're gonna actually get a little bit more in depth into some of the other campus situations that we're seeing across the state. But you're exactly right. Employees across the system's 13 4-year and 12 2-year branch campuses are feeling concerns that you are sharing with us right now. But these concerns, when the educators are seeing them, you better believe this is getting passed on to the students, because the students are recognizing the faults that are going on in their campuses as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, students are the frustrating thing about this is our administration, and I think a lot of faculty and staff, and I don't mean just my campus, I mean across the system, have tried to protect and shield our students from this for so long, right? And so what we've done is we've said, well, you know, we'll just do more with less. You know, we'll you know, be on extra committees, we'll teach extra classes, and you know, we'll still try to you know, make that time to talk to that student after class. We'll still, you know, try to make the time that we have to meet with students in our office to give them the extra support that they need. And it's just gotten to a breaking point. I mean, there's so many faculty now, the faculty and staff who are left, everybody just feels overworked, like they never have the time to get everything done. And it's now really starting to get to the students. And I think what's happening is we're all increasingly being honest with our students about what's happening, that, you know, these are political choices that have been made that are impacting their future. And so to go back to that article, that's why I was so worried when I was talking to that journalist. I was like, you know, like, we've already seen the quality of education diminish, not because we're not trying, but because we just don't have the resources. And, you know, what's it going to look like 5 years from now? It's just not going to be the same for future students. And so we got to start acting now.
Definitely. What you said earlier about DEI just being what students need to succeed, as somebody who recently went to college, that was absolutely my experience, that it's not some top-down indoctrination effort. It is something that usually the campus announces a new DEI program, and then the students are like, are you kidding me? That's it? Like, it is very much a student body led effort and based on what students are actively asking for.
Yeah, 100%. And what people don't realize about DEI is, you know, it's we have an increasing number of Somali students here at UW Green Bay. It's a prayer room for them, right? It's, you know, for students who are African American or Latino, it's having a space on campus, you know, where they know they can be with people who look like them. Not every space on campus, right? Like one space on campus. For military vets, it's having a space on campus where they know they can be with other people who are also vets, who can, you know, kind of share the needs that they have, you know, to talk about how their combat experience impacted them. That for LGBTQ students, it's knowing they have a space where, you know, people are going to get their pronouns right for a while, you know, and so like that's all DEI is. It's support services to make sure that every single student on campus succeeds. And, you know, it's just kind of like what kind of monsters would be against ensuring our students have their particular needs yet met, to your point, Aaron.
Yeah, everybody just wants to feel like they belong. And if there's one place where you should feel comfortable and feel like you are able to be yourself, it should be in an education setting, because we are all trying to better ourselves here. And you're right. You're exactly right, John. The only reason I can think of for someone not wanting to offer these services is to try to purposely distance these individuals from achieving their goals. So we're going to be continuing the conversation with Professor John Shelton today. This is Town Call. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Hold it now.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789, or take the show with you on the go. Download the Civic Media app. You can engage with us right from the app. You can call, you can text, you can connect with Town Call. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Type in Civic Media. It's free. It's easy to download. And it's Thursday, October 12th. We are joined by Professor John Shelton for office hours. The professor is in, and we are talking the state of higher education in the state of Wisconsin, and a lot of the policy decisions that are really hampering the ability for students in the Wisconsin school system to be able to reach their full potential. And John, going back to the Cap Times piece that you shared with me, I wanted to note some of the fiscal numbers behind the scenes. State funding for Wisconsin's higher education institutions has consistently declined since the year 2000. It's down 16% from 23 years ago when adjusted for inflation, according to a 2022 report from the State Higher Education Executive Officers Association. You discussed in the first segment how a lot of this is austerity in action, the purposeful attempts to reduce government budget deficits through spending cuts, tax increases, a combination of both, whatever it may or may not be, being willing to spend on the type of things that the government needs to do to make the lives of its citizens as best as it possibly can. And I worry, I guess, that Wisconsin, which has a rich history of some of the best public institutions in the nation, not only are we deviating from that, but it's intentional. A study from the nonpartisan Wisconsin Policy Forum shows Wisconsin ranked 24th nationally in higher education funding per full-time student in 2021. Now, that is an improvement from 31st the previous year. However, that increased ranking is largely driven by Wisconsin's two-year colleges, which were 5th nationally in per-student funding, compared with 43rd for its four-year campuses. The four-year campuses received nearly $16,000 in state and local tax and tuition funding per full-time student. To give you a little bit of a Midwest comparison, Illinois ranks first nationally at nearly $31,000 per student, Michigan ranks third at $26,000 per student, and Minnesota ranks eighth at $21,400 per student. We are purposely and systemically defunding higher education in the state of Wisconsin. I can't understand what purpose there would be for this, except to try to privatize these institutions to push whatever worldview or narrative the powers that be, in this case, the elected conservative officials, want.
Well, it's not privatization. It actually, what they want is for us not to exist, and the reason for that is because you noted the very long history of higher education in Wisconsin. Some of your listeners probably have heard of this thing called the Wisconsin idea, which goes back to the late 19th century. And in spite of the way it's used by like neoliberal administrators, who say stuff like the Wisconsin idea just means that, the university partners with, businesses to help them get employees. That's not at all what the Wisconsin idea is. What the Wisconsin idea really is, it was rooted in the late 19th century. And it was the idea that, knowledge production, the experts in the state of Wisconsin, because of their expertise, could connect with policymakers to help solve some of the biggest problems that existed. And in the late 19th century, those problems were things like child labor, class inequality, economic insecurity of so many workers. And so the Wisconsin idea wasn't just about the fact that the university system should connect to other parts of the state, although that's part of it, but it was about forging legislation informed by knowledge to solve these problems. So there was a whole legislative session. There's a book about this called The Wisconsin Idea by Charles McCarthy. And, what he talks about is all of the legislation that was passed in this 1911 legislative session, that things like workers' compensation, the first of its kind in the nation, reigning in the power of corporations, during the progressive era, all these things that come out of this legislative session. And by the way, I have a copy of the book. I sometimes have students read portions of it. The preface to that book was written by Teddy Roosevelt, former President Teddy Roosevelt, right? Who said that the UW system was, I believe he used the word, it wasn't a system at the time, but he said the University of Wisconsin, he used the word, it was an exemplar for the rest of the nation, an ideal for the rest of the universities and the public universities in the nation to follow. And this is and TR was an Ivy League blue blood, right? Who's saying this? He could have pointed to Princeton or Harvard, but he pointed to the University of Wisconsin because of its connection to progressive policy. And that's the tradition that the University of Wisconsin system comes out of. And for a very long time after World War II, the UW system was very well funded. And here's why those numbers really matter. It's not just in terms of the university's impact in, pushing for good social legislation and these things that Republicans frankly hate, right? That's one of the reasons they don't want us to exist, is because we push for policies that will actually make things better for working people, right? I mean, when you study these things, that's the conclusion that you come to. But for our students, when you look at those numbers, you noted 16,000 in state and local tax and tuition funding per full-time student, Illinois, 31,000, Michigan, 26,000. Here's what that actually leads to is putting more and more costs on the backs of students, right? And diminishing the quality of education. So like there's a reason that in Minnesota, they have, I believe, a tuition promise. They do have a tuition promise for families from modest means. So basically, like, you can, you know, if you don't come from a wealthy family, you can go to a University of Minnesota school tuition free. That students in Wisconsin have been deprived of that. That was actually another thing that was in the budget proposal, and something that UW System was pushing for, was this thing called the Wisconsin Tuition Promise, which would guarantee every student who came from a family making less than $60,000 wouldn't have to pay tuition. That's what we should be doing if we actually care about working people in this state. But, you know, because the legislature refuses to fund it, we can't fund that tuition promise. So people in other states, citizens in other states, are getting a public good that our students aren't getting, and they're having to come out with massive amount of debt. And it's because what Republicans want is for people either not to go to a four-year college or to go to a technical college, which our technical colleges are great. But the reason for that is because they don't want people, they don't want graduates who are coming out basically like thinking critically about social and economic inequality or racism in this country. They don't want people to think about those things because they want to keep people you know, impoverished and desperate for jobs with the corporate donors that, like, you know, essentially drive their candidacies when they run for election. And so at the end of the day, that's what this is about. They don't want us to exist because what we do threatens them.
Mm-hmm. The teaching critical aspect is a major component of that, I think, John, because you noted it. I couldn't have said it better myself, that in a lot of ways, if you need someone to take a job that you don't want to do, but you don't want them questioning your authority, giving them the ability to critically think is the very first step to get them to question the situations that they're in and recognize that there is an alternative. And I think particularly with the UW system, when you compare it to Minnesota, right? I'll give Luke a shout out. Something that he loves to talk about is the $130,000 worker shortfall we're facing in 2030. Where do you think young families are going to want to go if they're concerned about their child's education? Are they going to go to Minnesota, where they know their child is going to get a top tier education, and if they're and is going to be able to get a higher education, even if they don't necessarily earn enough to be able to pay for it? Or do they want to come to Wisconsin, where our legislature is systemically funding education at all levels? So we're going to go to the phone lines. John, if you have a question for Professor Shelton, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. First on the line, we got Joe from Madison. Joe, what are your thoughts for the professor today?
Thanks. Really great points. Two things that I wanted to respond to. In the previous segment, you were talking about the different populations that are coming to a school. And I think that's really an important point. There's this idea that everybody's 18 years old and sashaying off to school for the first time. Absolutely not true. And one of the populations you mentioned was that of veterans who are coming into college and a four-year school. And I just thought, really good point to understand that they have a different worldview, a different way that they've been in the world in terms of working within the military, how they bring that in, and the problems and pluses that all incorporates. Another example would be single moms who finally are able to get it together enough to go into school, and what that schooling means to them and how important it is for them to be able to coordinate the pressing demands they have with kids, family, and education. It's really important. We don't want to lose those people. We want them to be able to get a good education. The second point that I would make is that as a longtime Wisconsin resident, I am horrified at what is happening to higher education in the state. I think tech schools are fantastic and deserve all the funding they can get, but it is neglecting, when we come to the four-year schools, exactly where jobs may be coming from. I would offer a couple examples. Number one, video games. Okay, it's easy to discount that and go, oh, let it go out the window, that's some frivolous little thing. It is an industry that dwarfs the film industry now worldwide, and there have been people studying video games and how to use them, how to get the most out of them, how to use them in education, all sorts of really important uses of video games. And they have looked at Wisconsin and realized, I can't stay here. This is, you know, this is not a place that funds that sort of work. I would add another example, which is the Wharf Building here on Madison campus, Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, all about research that comes out of these schools. So it could be all the way, well, Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation was vitamin D. It was warfarin. These are, You know, the patents are held by the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, and money comes through for that. The University of Wisconsin system is the has been the biggest money maker in our state, and to disregard it in such a way, I don't get it. I mean, it to me it seems as stupid as not funding, you know, a new engineering school on campus, particularly when there had been $100 million set aside by private donors to help support that effort. So anyway, I really appreciate this topic. You cannot hit it hard enough. It's really important. Thanks a lot.
No, thank you, Joe. Thanks for the call. And I mean, I think Professor Shelton, Joe noted, she doesn't know why the elected officials are making this decision. I think you touched on that pretty well, that it's purposeful, it's intentional, it's malicious, this is by design.
Yeah, yes, it absolutely is. And it's because they don't like the idea that, you know, I mean, what Joe just sort of mentioned, you know, about the diversity on campus, single moms and single dads too, by the way, you know, veterans, you know, that kind of diversity we have on our campus, on our campuses is a beautiful thing. The ideological diversity, the racial and ethnic diversity, the gender diversity, the diversity among sexual orientation and identity, it's what makes a university a beautiful thing. And in the Republican vision of the world, and here I'm not talking about necessarily all Republican voters. I'm talking about the Republicans in the Assembly and Senate who are using this wedge for political gain, or at least they think they are. I think they're going to lose in the long term. They don't want that kind of diversity, right? They want working people of different races and genders and ethnicities. They want to set against each other because that's bad for them. Because that's bad for their corporate donors when we all learn how to live together and work together and organize together.
And then their hierarchical, you know, worldview, they place themselves, you know, the cis white man at the top, everybody else, the business owner, the people who are generating the revenue at the top, and everybody else is just kind of meant to fall in line. When we are allowing for diverse opinions and ideas, we are kind of challenging their worldview. And I think they are getting defensive now and reacting accordingly.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, you think about the veterans in this country. I mean, you often hear Republican leadership kind of wave the flag and talk about how they support veterans. But do you know how you really support veterans? So folks who have actually been in combat protecting our country, the way that you do that is by making sure they have the services that they need, by making sure that they have the healthcare that they need, by making sure that when they go onto a campus, they have the resources that they need. And you know, when you decide that you don't want them to have those things, boy, that sounds pretty un-American to me.
Having worked in a pharmacy, yeah, you see that a lot.
Nail on the head. So, and also I want to give a shout out to a point that Joe made when she mentioned video games, right? John, that's something right up my alley. But I think the overarching message that I took away from that is industry changes. She noted that video games are now larger than Hollywood, which is accurate. If you would have told someone 10, 20, 30 years ago, they would never have believed you, right? The old adage about, oh, you'll never get a job in video games, put the controller down. But now it's a booming, booming industry, and education needs to be able to reflect the changing industries around us if we want to be able to best prepare students to be participating, successful members of the workforce. So we're going to continue this conversation after the break. Professor John Shelton is here with us on Town Call today. We'll be right back. Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call, shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. It's Thursday, and the professor is in. We welcome back Professor John Shelton, and we are talking higher education in the state of Wisconsin. John, you made an excellent point that I wanted to give you the chance to touch on briefly regarding union organizing in regards to some of these industries that are starting to now boom because they are relatively new industries. Obviously, video games have been around for 20, 30 years at this point, but they haven't been necessarily as mainstream as they are becoming, as Joe pointed out in the last segment. And this is an issue near and dear to both of our hearts. I want to give you the chance to kind of reflect on that.
Yeah, well, something that's really important is when we talk about new industries, new jobs, yeah, a lot of times you hear this kind of argument that, like, higher education is going to prepare you for those things. And that's true, and maybe in terms of skills. But it's also really important to note that these new industries, when they start, they have the same problems as every other industry, right? Employers try to take advantage of workers, especially young workers. And so it's no accident that we're seeing unionization drives, right? I mean, right outside of Madison, I believe the company's in Middleton, Activision, right? Workers there have been organizing and have a union there. And, I think, just like as we've been talking in previous weeks, you know, these new industries, Starbucks and others, where you've got workers organizing, same thing's happening in video games. And so it's important, not just that people are preparing themselves for different jobs, but that they're preparing to organize for better wages and working conditions and workplace democracy in these jobs.
Yeah, right now, video games have been in a terrible place for a while because, especially with young workers, with new workers, you get hired and it's like, man, you're in your dream job. You get to make video games. Isn't
that so cool? It's a passion
project.
And then, same thing with teachers, right?
Absolutely.
It's easier to take advantage of someone who's doing what they do because they love it and recognize how important it is.
And then you have conditions where they're like, yeah, you're only going to have to work 40 hours a week. Now, you can stay later and work on stuff. You don't have to. You can. You definitely don't have to. Don't worry about it. You're not going to be spending 80-hour weeks and staying here all night to try and get stuff done. That's impossible on that timeline. And if you want to work on any games that are gory, like Mortal Kombat, NetherRealm, the studio who makes that, is infamous for forcing their employees to watch like ISIS beheading videos to make sure that the gore is realistic. And it's like,
wow.
You can do simulations and get what it would be like. I think that's just vile, forcing them to do it. Having it maybe as an option is still unethical, but forcing them to do it is just wild to me.
Yeah, that's absolutely awful. And you know,
culture in some of these companies have been a problem too, John. Riot Games is going to be my best example of that. They're famous for being, a bro company. It's a bunch of bros just playing video games. Well, some of the stories that have come out from female employees, it's grotesque. It's disgusting. But the company is going to protect itself. So these employees are, it's essentially their word against the company's.
Yeah. And you know, the only way to truly protect ourselves as workers is to organize, right, against this kind of stuff. And, this bigger, kind of young people culture of this career is your passion. There's a great book people should read by a journalist named Sarah Jaffe, and the title is Work Won't Love You Back. And it's basically an argument for, the idea that, like, no, there actually do need to be limits to your workday, and you need to make sure you're getting paid, and you need to make sure you have a say in your working conditions. Just loving something isn't enough to make it a good job.
Work-life balance is imperative. I mean, balance in all aspects of life is incredibly important. You know this, John. We've had this conversation based on my fitness background. You can overdose on water, right? It's the fundamental building block of life. It makes up 70% of our body, but everything is about moderation, and that includes how often you are working. You need to be able to give yourself time to relax, recuperate. We're going to go to the phone lines quick. Jack from Merrimack. Jack, do you have a quick comment, question, or concern for the professor?
Yeah, it's not just higher education that's under attack. I mean, the K-12 system has had its funding reduced and teachers attacked for teaching historical facts for decades. And I recall reading even in the 1970s, a group of high money people and corporations, and they met and made a long-term plan, the idea of which was to destroy public education in America. Even Trump himself said, I love the poorly educated. Now, the plan, unfortunately, seems to be working. In the latest so-called budget, private schools are given about $3,000 per student from our state surplus. Public schools weren't given a penny from the surplus. They were just given the ability to maybe raise about a tenth of that amount, but they could only do so by referendum. Regularly, we hear teachers simply trying to deal with the real diversity in our society being attacked. It's caused people like my son, recently graduated with a teaching degree from Eau Claire and certification, and he's left the state. He went to Minnesota. And as you guys pointed out on this program, Minnesota is serious about promoting their educational system. In fact, it's so serious that the Native Roots program, it's the one from Minnesota about Native Americans. And there's an ad, or at least there was earlier in the school year, there was a $10,000 signing bonus for new teachers offered by the St. Paul Public Schools. That's serious about education.
No, that's incredibly serious. Great point, Jack. And we've discussed it, John. We know how important public education is, and we know why young teachers and young professionals and young families are going to be choosing to go to these states instead of our state, because that's what matters for the future of their children. So, John, this is a conversation I can guarantee you and I will be having again in the very near future. But for now, we got to finish up with our favorite segment of the week. We joke about it throughout the week. The fantasy flyer and the labor lock of the week. Last week, Dan had Terry McLaurin, who did not do so hot, wide receiver 42, and Jonathan Taylor, running back 42. I had the Robinsons, neither of whom balled out at running back 22 and 30, but my flyer of Jordan Addison at 14 did all right. Who do you got for me this week, John?
Yeah, so I've joked about this. I love the idea that there are people listening to this who are like, let's get through the 50 minutes of political stuff so that we can just hear the labor stuff or the fantasy football stuff. Okay, as a Packers fan, it hurts me to go with the Bears, but Justin Fields is my lock. He's been playing incredible this week, going up against the Vikings, who we all know have no defense. And then I was going to pick Roschon Johnson, the running back, but it doesn't look like he's going to be able to play. So I'm switching to Dante Foreman, who's probably going to get most of the carries for the Bears. And again, in a game that I think the Bears might actually be winning, might actually get a lot of carries and could be a really good flyer for people.
That is bold, John. Doubling up on the Chicago Bears. I like it. I considered going with TJ Hockenson as my labor lock with Justin Jefferson out. The opposite side of that game, assuming there's a shootout. But I'm instead going to go with my boy because he's on my personal fantasy team. Cooper Kupp has the Arizona Cardinals this week. They were just torched by Ja'Marr Chase for a 56 spot last week. I need Cooper to come through. Maybe I'm just trying to wish it into existence. I don't know. But my fantasy flyer of the week will be Isaiah Pacheco, Kansas City Chiefs running back, going up against that incredibly historically porous Denver defense. So we're going to have to see how these turn out for us next week, John. It's going to be hard for you rooting for the Bears this weekend. But hey, we got to do what we got to do for the people, right? Thank you for joining us today.
You get to root against the Vikings, though.
Oh, you're right. I mean, you can't lose in this situation, right? Thanks for joining us today, Professor Shelton. We will be back tomorrow with headlines of the week. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. Hope to see you there. Take it easy, party people.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.